Chase McCabe live today at Ascension St. Thomas Sports Park, Tennessee Titans training camp. Hope you're having a fantastic Tuesday so far. And our training camp coverage presented by the Simmons Bank Open, Parman Energy, Cottle Vet Clinic, and the New Cumberland Development. Appreciate them for being on board with us as camp practice continues. You know, one thing that I haven't mentioned yet that I want to is happy heavenly birthday to the late, great GM Floyd Reese. Today is his birthday, and, you know, just saw a post on Twitter that or on Instagram that reminded me of that. Can't believe Floyd has been gone almost 2 years at the end of this month. Kind of a tough time for me because I lost my dad around the same time. So thinking about Floyd today, though, as we sit here, because he loved nothing more than to sit out here at Titans training camp and watch the team practice, and had his clipboard and notebook and everything and did his evaluation. So thinking of Sally and the Reese family today, as our GM always with us. But as we kind of look at things, you know, from a around the league perspective, ESPN did an article that they had their breakout stars of 2023. For that, and they did it in different categories. This is Bill Barnwell, and he always puts these things together this time of year on ESPN Plus. And he says breakout, though, isn't a term that fits every NFL player. A starting quarterback's breakout season might see him contend for MVP votes. For a player bouncing around the bottom of the NFL rosters and practice squads, though, breaking out might be earning 17 game checks. And so it's a kind of a different way to look at it. And they have different categories: Pro Bowlers to superstars, starter to Pro Bowlers, rotation to solid starters, post-hype candidates. So where do the Titans fall in this? And who is it that falls into this category? Well, he has, for the Titans, Chigakonkwo. I think that fits right, as he's in rotation players to solid starters. And a little blurb of what he says about Chigakonkwo: Tennessee is coming off a lost 22 season, but one of the bright spots from the frustrating campaign was its rookie tight end. Okonkwo made his presence known with a stretch in which he got open for a long catch every week. He finished with four catches of 30-plus yards. The only tight ends with more were Travis Kelce, George Kittle, T.J. Hockenson, and Hunter Henry. He averaged 2.9s per route on 154 routes. The only player with 100 routes or more who averaged more yards was Tyreek Hill. That's an interesting company to be in for Chigakonkwo. Playing on a team that runs at one of the league's highest rates, and with DeAndre Hopkins and Traylon Burks at wide receiver, Okonkwo won't attract huge target numbers. If he can run even five more routes per game, though, he could push towards being a top-end tight end. I think that's 100%. I think that Chig's going to factor into this. You know, even with Henry, even with DeAndre, even with Traylon, he's going to factor in to the offense this year. He spoke to the media yesterday, ironically, and was asked about, you know, and he's not always, didn't always like to talk a whole lot, but kind of was asked about Tony Dews making some comparisons to other guys and kind of where he fits. Here was Chigakonkwo.
Tony Dews oftentimes does cut up for the running back when he goes down, just to show you guys in the league, other players. Has he done that with you guys, and if so, who?
Yeah, he's done that with a ton of players. I watch Delanie Walker a lot. He did a lot of cut-ups with Delanie Walker, a lot of cut-ups of Kelce and Kittle, Mark Andrews. So I think mostly Delanie Walker so far.
What do you take out of it?
A lot of guys have different ways of winning. Not everybody wins the same. Everybody plays to their strengths and what works for them. So for me, just learning that I got to find out what works for me might not work for Kittle, Kelce, Andrews, or Delanie. So.
Have you gotten to speak to Delanie at all? I know he has some interest in meeting you.
I haven't spoken to him in a minute, but we have spoken before, though.
That was Chigakonkwo yesterday. And, you know, I'm glad he answered it the way he did, because it kind of showed me that, you know, he knows that he's his own player. He's not trying to be George Kittle. He's not trying to be Delanie Walker. And I think sometimes it's unfair to do those type of comparisons. Just like, what Treylon Burks had to deal with last year of, you know, he's coming in here to replace A.J. Brown. I mean, technically on the roster, yes, but he's coming in here to be Treylon Burks, not A.J. Brown. Just like Chigakonkwo is coming in here to be Chigakonkwo, not Delanie Walker. Now, if he turns out to have a similar skill set and turns out to, you know, have that kind of production like a Delanie Walker, you take that all day long. Because Delanie Walker, you know, in the Titans era, is probably the second best tight end that they've ever had in the Titans era. So you would take that 100%. But he's got to be his own player. And so I think it's interesting that in this article, Bill Barnwell points out Chigakonkwo, because I think the easy one would be Treylon Burks, that, you know, you want Treylon Burks to become a superstar. And I think he's got that ability. You know, I think that he certainly is going to have a leap of a year. And, you know, I think if everything is perfect and you get what you want, you're talking about Treylon Burks and Chigakonkwo from an offensive standpoint at the end of the season. I mean, watching Treylon, like, he's standing in front of us. I mean, he definitely looks the part. He looks different. And that in a good way. I mean that in a good way. And so I think it would be certainly interesting to talk about both of them. Now, some other players, like with Kansas City, he's got Sky Moore in a rotation players to solid starters. I think that's interesting. Let's see. Let's look at post-hype candidates. These are the players who, for one reason or another, have fallen off the breakout radar and aren't getting the appropriate level of attention heading into the season. Last year, the classic example of a post-hype breakout would have been Raiders running back Josh Jacobs, who went from playing in the Hall of Fame game and having his fifth-year option decline to leading the league in rushing yards. These players don't necessarily fit into any of the categories above, but they can regain that attention in 2023, and I could not agree more with who's number one. Mac Jones, quarterback of the Patriots. I mean, who knows what he is? I don't think he's a starting NFL quarterback. Or I take that back. I don't think he's a superstar starter NFL quarterback that's going to lead his team to winning anything. You know, he might be a stopgap or whatever, but I don't think he's the answer. Antonio Gibson, running back for the Commanders. That's an interesting one. Byron Murphy, cornerback of the Vikings. Cleveland Farrell, edge rusher for the 49ers. That's also an interesting one. Rashawn Gary, edge rusher for the Packers. Azeez Ojulari for the Giants. So those are some other post-hype candidates. Now, the ones that can really break out, starters to Pro Bowlers, he's got Garrett Wilson, number one, wide receiver for the Jets. I agree with that. I think Garrett Wilson, especially with Aaron Rodgers throwing the ball to him, is going to be one of the top receivers in the league this year. I mean, he's already come on and looked pretty good as Offensive Rookie of the Year. 83 catches for 1,100 yards and four touchdowns. Didn't get to the Pro Bowl last year, but I think he certainly could do that playing with Rodgers. He's got Charles Cross, offensive tackle for the Seahawks, on there. Jalen Phillips, edge rusher for Miami. You know, Miami continues to be a team that I think is going to be interesting this year. Jalen Petrie, safety for the Texans, staying in the AFC South. So, you know, I think it's interesting when you bring up some of these type players. But Chigakonkwo, like, who else besides Treylon Burks and Chigakonkwo do you want to see be a breakout player for 2023 for the Titans? 615-737-1025. I mean, those are obviously the top two. There's no doubt. I think Christian Fulton fits into that. I want to see Christian Fulton ball out this year. I mean, if we're talking about Christian Fulton as a Pro Bowl cornerback, I mean, he's going to get paid. I don't know if it'll be here, but he's certainly going to get a new contract. But they need Christian Fulton to have a breakout year. They need him to be healthy. They need him to make big plays. So keep those coming in, 615-737-1025 on our phone and text line driven by Wilson County Hyundai. com. Coming up next, I haven't had a chance to react to this whole situation in college football. the Pac-12. What's next? We'll discuss that next. 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Quite frankly, what we have now, we have two super conferences in college football and then another, what I would call a nice conference in the Big 12. And I don't know where the ACC is. I mean, to me, one of the most interesting stories of the week was the fact that Florida State decided, you know what, we're too good for the ACC. We want out. And even today, there's another story out, Dan, on that, not to be jumping all over the place, that the university in Tallahassee is looking into private equity to try to buy their way out. Now, how much would it cost for them to leave? $120 million. They better work on that pretty hard.
That was Paul Feinbaum of the Paul Feinbaum Show. Two super conferences and a nice conference. Interesting way to put it. I think I said the other day the Power 2 and the other three, or maybe it's other two now. Chase McCabe, 102.5, 106.3, The Game at Titans training camp. But, you know, over the weekend, I guess we officially poured one out for the Pac-12, as it is pretty much, as Nick Saban said many years ago, dead, buried, and gone. And, I mean, it's sad, obviously, because you've seen a Power 5 conference, you know, disintegrate before our very eyes. And, you know, Jared and I were kind of texting about it, and he said, well, we saw the Big East die. And I think that's the best comparison you can make. But was the Big East at that point, you know, at the same level of the Pac-12? I mean, Pac-12 had USC, Oregon, you know, contenders. You know, the Big East in basketball, sure. You know, I think that's where the Big East really stood out to me. But in football, I think the Pac-12 is a little bit different. But, you know, and there's other people that are saying, like, Washington and Oregon sealed the Pac-12 fate. You know, Arizona was the next one. And now you have the ACC getting involved. You know, what's going to happen with Florida State? Because if I'm the ACC, I'm looking at this going, we got to play this very carefully. Because if Florida State's serious and they bolt, I think Clemson and Miami are right behind them. That's powerhouse, especially for football. Now, you can preserve things by, you know, trying to maybe add a couple more teams to replace them and then hold on to Duke and Carolina and, you know, whatever for basketball. But for football, I mean, it's, again, you're not going to be in the same playing field as the SEC and the Big Ten. You're not now. So they got to tread lightly when it comes to that. The Big 12, you know, I think last summer we thought the Big 12 was dead, and now they've been able to go into survival mode, and now, as Paul Feinbaum put it, they're going to be nice. They're going to have a nice conference. But it's just a really weird time in college football. And, you know, like I heard the discussion on Robbie and Rexrow this morning with Paul Kaharsky filling in for Robbie, and Joe, you know, kind of raised the question of, like, at what point, you know, if you're like the SEC and you're one of these super conferences, do you have different tiers of your super conference? And, you know, you look at teams like, and he used Vanderbilt as an example of that, while we all like Clark Lee and we all think that, you know, football is certainly, you know, trending in the right direction, and I hope it continues to turn in the right direction, but do other schools in that conference look at Vanderbilt and it's like, nah, now in this conference, like, we're gonna have the big boy table and we're gonna have the other table, and then what happens? I mean, so there's just different tentacles to this whole thing as the landscape of college football and college athletics, you know, continue to change. I feel like it's trending more and more that football is going to be its own thing, and then you'll have maybe some of the more traditional conferences for everything else. It just feels that way, where, you know, you can have a super conference of 32 whatever teams competing for the big national championship, and then you'll probably have another national championship and then another one, and just different tiers like you would in high school football. That feels like where it's going, and then basketball can be more of what we've been used to potentially. But this real, I mean, ESPN even has a realignment tracker now. you know, I mean, it's unbelievable to watch, you know, to kind of look at this. Like, the ACC, 14 teams this year. It says the ACC hadn't announced any plans to expand or contract over the next two seasons. The Big Ten, 14 teams this year. 2024, in one of the biggest moves in realignment history, Pac-12 schools USC, UCLA, Oregon, and Washington will join the Big Ten in 2024. That's next year. 18 teams. Unbelievable that it's that that's where it's at. Big 12, same thing. They're adding 16 teams. The Pac-12, basically, right now in 2024, Cal, Oregon State, Stanford, Washington State. So they go from the Pac-12 to the Pac-4. That ain't going to work. So where is this going, and how do you feel about it? 615-737-1025 is our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. I mean, I guess the thing is, like, people can sit here and they can go, I hate this. This is bad for college football. It's ruining the traditions of college football. You're ruining rivalries, you know, and all that, and you could be mad about it. But, like, how many of you are actually going to stop watching? And that's where they got us. That's where they hang on to this, is they're not going to they know that we're not going to quit watching. We're going to watch. You're going to tune in to Fox or CBS or ABC or NBC, and you're going to watch whatever the matchup is and whatever the conference is, whoever the head coach is, especially if it's your team. I mean, you just are. There might be a small group that says, I'm done. Just like there was a small group that was done with the NFL for whatever reason. You know, small group that was done with the NBA for whatever reason. I mean, that happens. I call them the loud minority. But there's a reason it's a billion-dollar business. There's a reason that the SEC and the Big Ten have signed these new contracts with these networks, and that the networks want to sign these new contracts, because they know it's not going away. And it can keep realigning, and you can cannibalize a conference and, you know, see Pac-12 After Dark go away. Pour one out for that. You're still going to watch. That's the thing. You can be mad about it. You can say that it's bad for college athletics, but they know you're still going to watch, and that's where they got you. So what's next? I mean, this isn't done by a long shot, because, as I mentioned, the Pac-12, as of right now in 2024, will have four teams. That isn't going to work. So where are they going to go? You're gonna add to these things. But, like, in the Big 12, you know, are they done? Like, you remember when we were sitting here last summer, I guess it was, and it's like, what's going to happen to the Big 12 now that Oklahoma and Texas are bolting for the SEC? Like, can the Big 12 survive this? And there was all this talk of alliances and things like that, and that fell through. That, obviously, looking back on that now, had that worked, then that probably would have worked out better for the Pac-12. That didn't happen. But it's fascinating to watch this train wreck that is college football right now. And we're not even – thing is, like, camps are, you know, happening, and the games are just a few weeks away. We're not even talking about that. We're talking about in August, we're talking about realignment. That's the part I hate, is, like, I'm ready to talk about the games. I'm ready to talk about the players. I'm ready to talk about position battles, Heisman battle, you know, what coach is on the hot seat. That's what I'm ready to talk about. But we're sitting here talking about realignment. And, you know, it's a topic that won't go away. 615-737-1025. I mean, Cal and Stanford in the ACC. Tell me how that works. Like, I mean, that's probably what's going to happen as the Pac-12 continues to blow up. Unbelievable.
I will say this, Chase, with the Pac-12 just dissipating in front of our eyes, it gets to the point where these cupcake games that college football normally has on a season-to-season basis, they're going to go away. So, like, those smaller schools that are more tune-up games for these bigger colleges, those will go away, and those small colleges won't have those financially, I guess, bigger pocketbooks whenever they play, like, an Alabama or a Michigan. Because if you get these super conferences, you're going to have to expand the season extra 2 to 3 games, would you say?
Oh, I mean, I think that's coming. Basically, look at it like this, Nick. Anything that adds a zero to the already large number that these schools and these conferences and these people get, that's what drives it. It's money. It's all about money. So if they can add to you talk about open the pocketbook. Yup. They add to it, then they'll do whatever. That's what this is to this point. So what is this from Lane Kiffin? He tweeted he quote tweeted So Shannon Cunningham says, I chose to play in the Pac-12 because of the ability to play close to home and in front of family. I chose the Pac so my family didn't have to worry about far travel or giving up all their vacation time just to come see me. This affects athletes in every sport and academics. And Lane Kiffin quote tweeted and said, sorry, they obviously didn't think about how it would affect the ones that actually have to play, travel, and go to class the next day at Pac-12. He's 100% right. But again, they're not thinking about that. You know why? Oh, I got another zero. That's what's driving this. And I'm not saying that's right. I'm just telling you why it is. But good for Lane Kiffin. I mean, he's right. Now, are people going to listen to what Lane Kiffin has to say, or, you know, are they going to look at him and go hypocrite? but he's not wrong with that quote tweet. Texters on our text line. Ron says, do you think this could start new rivalries? Is that interesting? I mean, sure. I mean, you'll get new rivalries. I mean, especially if you're adding USC and you're adding USC to the Big Ten. It's gonna add intrigue. But that's not really what this conversation is about. You know? D-Mace just sat down and goes, here comes the Louisville Scout. I mean, Jared is decked out in all red. He's even got a red hat on. I like that. Another texter says, yes, I'll watch, but I'm not going to pay hundreds of dollars to stream games. Yeah, the streaming thing is certainly part of it, too. But, I mean, you know, how many people would go to a sports bar? Or, I mean, surely they'll figure some of that out. So, certainly something to watch for sure. Coming up next, and we'll get Jonathan Hutton's opinion on this, too. Not just the Titans. He's going to join us from Outkick here on Chase McCabe, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase McCabe, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, broadcasting live today, Ascension St. Thomas Sports Park. Titans training camp practice continuing right now, watching different drills out here. Got some fans out here as well. We say hello to Jonathan Hutton from Outkick, Hot mic with Hutton and Withrow, weekdays from 2 to 5 on 94.9 The Fan. Hut, what's up?
Chase, hope things are well out there at camp today.
Oh, yeah, not too bad. It's not too hot either, which is nice.
Yeah,
so
perfect. Yeah, it's good.
I had to wear pants today. I couldn't do the shorts, so, you know, I'm really glad it's not that hot. So
you're
it's worked out well
suit
for me.
Today, the half suit.
Yes, exactly. before we get into the Titans, though, I just want to start with college football. And, you know, I was just talking about it in the last segment about all this realignment. I mean, we've watched the Pac-12 die. Like, it's gone. I know technically there are four teams remaining. They're going to be gone soon. The Pac-12 is going to cease to exist. And I know we watched the Big East, the old Big East die. I put the Pac-12 in a little bit of a different category than the old Big East. But what does this mean moving forward, and how did we get to this point?
Well, we got to this point, if you go back, with Larry Scott's leadership of the Pac-12. Specifically, back in 2018, there's an audio clip, a video. It may have been at their media days. It may have been just after, but he's boasting about the position that they were in going into the 2024 media contract being up. That was in 2018, and how, you know, how everyone stood aligned and they were going to be in great position for whatever was to come. with the college football playoff rumors and realignment and expansion and all these different things. Now, fast forward a couple of years, they're in dire straits financially. They probably were then too at the time. And it leaves Klavkov with, you know, not much to work with, but at the same time, he has been the opposite of what we have seen take place in the Big 12. And it's all just based on leadership and foresight. You know, I think the Big 12 has stayed relevant. Have they survived this? Yes, they've survived this. But where are we going to be in 5 years? Let's try 3 years, three and a half, Jace, because college football playoff expansion, which is coming to 12, that is a two-year agreement. So they will be renegotiating that. And before they even kick off the college football playoff, what they've got to do is go back and tell us what is in store for the automatic qualifiers. Because, again, with four schools in the current Pac-12, that's not going to remain the same. And the Power Five, the champions of the Power Five, get an automatic qualifying bid to the playoff. That's certainly not going to be the case for the Pac-12 as it stands now. And that I would include that should be the case, even if they just add on or merge with the Mountain West, because – this reminds me a lot of Conference USA and the Sun Belt. There's a lot of boasting and bragging about Sun Belt teams that jumped to Conference USA a handful of years back. And really all that happened is Sun Belt became Conference USA because the Conference USA schools that you were boasting about, well, they all left. So this is what they're left with. And you're exactly right. It was the death knell. It was the death knell when Oregon bolted. And that was before Arizona State, and Utah also were packed up and ready to go to the Big 12.
Here's kind of how I see this, too, that it's going to get to a point where you're going to have the two super conferences in the Big 10 and the SEC. You know, you mentioned the Big 12. They kind of went into survival mode, and they're going to survive. The ACC, I think I put them in the same category, but if they're not careful, they're going to be in trouble. So you get to that point. I see a time in the next five-ish years where maybe there's three national champions. Your super conference playoff, college football playoff, that's basically the SEC and the Big Ten, the other guys, and then maybe the group of five finally gets together and they have their own. Could you see it potentially going that way?
Well, I love this conversation because I'm trying to think of it from who's really running all of this. And it's the networks, right?
Sure.
So look at it from this perspective, and I don't disagree with it because I think anything's on the table. And there can be mismanagement that leads to a lot of things. But ESPN, I think the ACC is going to be okay because of ESPN. ESPN needs programming. And just from and it's not just like bad football. But if you think of everything that ESPN has a platform for, from ESPN Plus to, you know, different channels there, then they have the, you know, ACC network tie-ins. They have what they've done with SEC Network, SEC Network Plus, on top of ESPN, ESPN2, ESPNU, ABC, all these different things. Well, it's not just from ESPN's perspective. Hoops is a big deal for them. In the non-football months, they need live programming. Live programming drives a needle. And unless you're airing an NFL game, you want college athletics on your screen, especially the Big Two, which is football and basketball. So I think in considering there's a grant of rights in place through 2036 and that media deal, I don't think they're going to let ESPN – I'm saying ESPN. I don't think ESPN would let the ACC implode itself the same way the Pac-12 did. Sure, there can be some schools that bolt. But from ESPN's perspective, Chase, if Florida State left, why is it good business for ESPN to pay Florida State more to join the SEC – when they already have the rights to Florida State and all the rights to their home games? I mean, they're even airing the Florida State LSU game on ABC or ESPN1 whenever the season kicks off this year. They have the rights last year and this year, too, even for the non-home games, neutral site games. Point being, I think some conferences are a bit more, not totally protected, But they do have someone looking out for what is in their best interest. Now, if they take that advice, that's one thing. If they don't, that's foolish. But I think in the Pac-12's case, their media deal was up, and they had nowhere to go but Apple TV+. And that is that's not a good thing when you don't have linear television, because you need your biggest brand on TV, not behind a paywall. And that's what would have happened with linear being a secondary option. And if I may here, yeah. And just take it to this level too. Consider this: outside of the conference expansion and what has happened over the last 2 weeks, it all happened very fast. These are the same conferences. This is the same leadership that stood at podiums at SEC Media Days, at Big Ten Media Days, and across the country and said, NIL, we've got to get a stranglehold. We've got to get federal legislation to rein this in. You know, the transfer portal is out of hand. Name, image, likeness. Players are making money and they're bolting. There's a lot of tampering that's going on with rosters. We're having to recruit at our schools, our own roster, instead of the high school market. Those same people within the same time period of literal days, and not months, but weeks, just transfer portaled an entire conference. They sent teams packing all over the almighty dollar and took those teams in like it was nothing, like they haven't been in an echo chamber listening to themselves speak instead of getting the reaction and feedback from people that, by and large, fans are going to watch the best football and the best product. If it was about playing for the love of the game, there'd be a Floyd Stadium that was packed every weekend, and that's not the case. So, yeah, I mean, the hypocrisy is blatant, and I don't think that that's the top headline, but it should be, because the same guys that are at podium saying, you know, name, image, likeness, and the transfer portal are bad for college sports, are doing the exact same thing on a mega million-dollar level, and they did it just after saying all this.
Jonathan Hutton is with us from Outkick. We're here at Titans training camp today, and team period going on. You probably heard the groan of the crowd there. There was a drop pass that I think would have been six. Didn't quite see who it was, but just saw the ball hit the turf. Vrabel announced yesterday that Terrell Williams, the assistant head coach, will be acting as the head coach against the Chicago Bears to open the preseason. Unprecedented, but I understand what he's doing to give Williams the reps to go through as a head coach. What do you think about that move?
I have no problem with it. This happens not from the head coaching standpoint, like on the headset, but like this happens more times than even I thought it was going on whenever I was traveling around with the team. But for instance, you know, Mike McDaniel, who was just hired last year in Miami, during preseason, he would call plays for Shanahan in his office, like to have a game to call plays as a coordinator, because he was just the co-coordinator who wasn't really calling plays because of Shanahan's offense. Same deal, I believe, with Nathaniel Hackett and LaFleur in Green Bay, because the offensive-minded coaches are getting hired. So I think from Vrabel's perspective, if he believes Terrell Williams, and I have heard this, this goes back a ways, where I've heard that Terrell Williams has the head coach mentality and material, right? I heard that about Arthur Smith as well.
Yeah.
Well, as a positional coach, if you want to get noticed, you either call plays or you act as the head coach in a preseason game. And especially if you're on defense, Jay. So I think by Vrabel just announcing this going into preseason week one, that gets more attention than just after the game, like, oh, yeah, Terrell called the plays instead of Bowen. I think they want to keep the continuity going with some of the guys who are going to play a bit on Chicago's in Chicago this weekend from a defensive perspective, and they give Terrell the chance to manage the game. I don't think it's a bad thing at all. And, look, by the end of the first quarter, everyone's going to be looking to get out of there healthy. That's the main thing with all this. And look, it gives Terrell Williams a platform to maybe have a game situation or something. But also keep this in mind: if it's fourth and four, and it's at right at midfield, or it's on the opponent's yard line or your own yard line at the 35 in a tie game and you're going to decide to kick it or not. It's not like you manage this game to go to overtime either. So
no, I want them to kick it because I want to see if they got a kicker that can make it.
Well, you want to kick it unless it's going to tie the game and go to overtime.
So, yeah, well, true.
So even with the positional battles, it's not the be-all, end-all of a game to manage. Let's put it that way.
Real quick, how do you want to see them rotate Willis and Levis?
You know, I've thought about this. I don't mind a half and a half, but it is like you are seeing a quarterback with, for the most part, in the first game. You will see Willis and going by the depth chart, you'll see Willis go with the guys he's been practicing with for the most part. Same thing with Levis. So I don't have a problem with the first game. I do like the spontaneous nature, though, of, okay, it's time for you to go in. You're sitting. Let's go through the motions of just getting warm really fast and going in. I think that's the more of the backup job anyway. If they were battling for the starting role, rotating big reps in chunks would be the way to go for me throughout the entire preseason. I think they'll have to shake it up, though, a bit and have some emergency-like situation that's not expected on both guys, and then see exactly what happens with how they handle it. Because that would happen in a game, whereas, sure. Tannehill's coming out in this play. No. They can't afford to do that this year like they tried to put Willis in spots last year.
Going to be interesting to see for sure. Jonathan, good to talk to you as always. Thanks for doing this, and we'll talk next week.
Yep, always enjoyed, Chase. Have a great day, and good luck with all the meetings that require pants today.
Absolutely. Thanks, Jonathan Hutton from OutKick. Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow, weekdays 2 to 5 on 94.9. The Fan will give you a practice update coming up next, and also a little more on Terrell Williams here on Chase McCabe, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
I told the team and, you know, everybody involved here at the organization, but Terrell Williams will act as the head coach for Chicago starting on Friday. So I think this is a great opportunity for him and for us and everybody involved. So Big T will handle that. Clint will handle the defensive line. And so that will start on Friday. So you guys can handle that through Robbie. And the communication when you talk to Big T and you know, kind of steer it towards that. And he'll talk to you after the game, and I'll come back on Sunday and visit with you guys. So,
Mike Vrabel yesterday explaining Terrell Williams, who is the assistant head coach and defensive line coach, will act as the head coach this weekend against Chicago. Chase McCabe live today, Titans training camp, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. And all of our training camp coverage is presented by the Simmons Bank Open, Parman Energy, Caudill Vet Clinic, and the New Cumberland Development. Let's give something away, Nick. Let's make the people happy, shall we?
We shall.
Caller number 5 at 615-737-1025 will win a pair of tickets to see Incubus at First Bank Amphitheater on Wednesday, August 16th. Caller number 5, 615-737-1025 will win that. And also, I'm excited about this. I'm going to go because I do like beer. I've been known to have a beer. Or cold beer, as some people like to call it. Who was it that said that? I'm blanking on it now. I hate it when I do that. Sam Pittman. That's who it was. Sam Pittman has done a couple of interviews of after a big win. And he'll say, like, I'm going to go have that old cold beer, is how he puts it. But get out of the summer heat and join us for craft brews, food, games, and entertainment at the 2023 Nashville Predators Craft Beer Festival. The fun begins this Friday from 6:30 to 10 at Bridgestone Arena, and proceeds benefit the Preds Foundation, which supports Middle Tennessee nonprofit groups and programs in the community. So looking forward to that. I love the Terrell Williams idea. You know that Mike Vrabel is still going to be involved. He's going to let Big T, as he calls him, go through the game as the head coach, but just to get the reps, just to get the experience. And I want to see, you know, Hutton mentioned that, you know, you've seen this with guys that call plays that you don't usually call plays to get that experience. This is just another way to get a guy experience. But and could it lead to something? You know, could it lead to Terrell Williams becoming a head coach in the National Football League? You know, who knows? But obviously there's a lot of things that have to be accomplished from the Titans. You know, I mentioned to Hutton, I want to see the rotation between Willis and Levis and what happens with that. But, you know, I think overall I trust what Mike Vrabel's doing here, and I think it's a positive move. And so looking forward to seeing that coming up Saturday, a noon kick for the Titans as they open the preseason against Chicago. Wrapping up practice, I believe I heard Rashad Weaver is going to join Caroline Willie and D-Mace after practice is over. So that'll be cool to see Rashad Weaver join them. But watching different team periods right now, and Will Levis is at quarterback. And so I've been trying, and it's hard when I'm doing the show and practice is going on to kind of pay attention, but they do have refs out here. Which I think is beneficial, and so just saw the flag fly. You know, the refs need some practice, and also gives you know, young players, you know, to know what they can and can't do, and kind of get in that sense. And so I think there is a benefit to having officials at practice. You know, Mike Vrabel can use that as a, you know, coaching tool and talk to the refs as well and kind of learn some things. And so it's preseason for everybody, but certainly a benefit to have that in here. But and the other thing too that's nice is it's not so blasted hot either, which is good, and I think that's like can help. You know, obviously you got to deal with the elements, but you're not having to focus on that as much. It's actually quite comfortable out here today, so that's been good to see. But watching Levis command things right now as they go through some team drills, but kind of looking through Twitter, Ben Arthur said, like the play Malik Willis just made in team period, faced quick pressure coming from his right, sidestep to the left and rolled out to hit Josh Wiley outside the numbers. You know, that's the thing that's really stood out to me with Malik Willis is he's able to manipulate the pocket much better than he did last year. And I've certainly liked seeing that, and that's where he's shown some vast improvement. But Mike Vrabel will speak. There'll be a full breakdown of things. That's what Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace will be doing, as Caroline and D-Mace will be live out here at Titans training camp. They'll be joined by Rashad Weaver. He will join the fray, and we'll see how he's doing, because I think he's an important player on defense this year. You know, when we were talking about breakout players earlier, somebody said Arden Key is being one, and I certainly agree with that. Could certainly make a huge impact for this team this year. That is going to do it for me today. Again, don't go anywhere. Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace, Rashad Weaver at the end of practice as things are wrapping up here at Titans training camp. I'm back at it tomorrow at 9 here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game.